pride from becoming adults. All right, and joining the rest of us in the ranks of adulthood. All right, so we're talking, as far as I understand, the theme of this meeting at the moment is a different perspective. So looking at our perspectives, the way we think as Christians compared to the way a non-Christian would think. Okay? And so the topic today is love. So how do we think about love differently to the way the world thinks about love? Okay? So we'll start by defining the topic. So I looked up the definition of love on the internet. Okay? And as you know, when you look up a definition, there's multiple layers of the definition. Okay? So one of the definitions that I came across was a strong affection for another arising out of kinship or personal ties, attraction based on sexual desire, affection and tenderness felt by lovers, affection based on admiration, benevolence, or common interests. Okay? So if you define love in that way, then there's always some sort of material relationship or material gain or something that makes you love another. Okay? There's some sort of connection that makes you love. Okay? But if you define it in another way that I found was an unselfish, loyal, and benevolent concern for the good of another, as the fatherly concern of God for humankind. Okay? So the very first difference between the way we think and the way the outside world thinks is that we define our love differently. We define it very differently. The world's love is defined based on relationships. I love you because you're my mother. I love you because you're my father. You love me because I'm your brother, or my personality suits your personality. Okay, therefore we love each other. But the way a Christian thinks is that I love everyone regardless of relationship, regardless of gain. Okay, so the very first difference between us and everyone else is we define our love very differently. Okay. All right. So now let's look at the importance of love to God. Okay. How does, when God speaks about love, does he consider it important? Okay? And so we'll read a passage to show you just how important he finds love. I hate to have the projector so far behind. All right, so Matthew 22, obviously no one has Bibles there. Matthew 22. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, which is a great command in the law?" Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Okay? So someone's coming and asking, what's the greatest thing to do? What's the greatest way to live one's life? And he says to him, "You tell me, what does the Old Testament say the greatest way to live your life is?" And so the guy responds saying, "To love God and to love your neighbor." And Jesus says, "And on this, define everything. All the law and the prophets, everything you've ever read, define it by loving God and loving your neighbor. That's your definition in life. That's how important love is to God. It's the greatest way to live. There's no other way of living but to love God and to love man." Okay? That's how important it is. And he finishes in Mark the same passage. After they have this dialogue, Jesus says to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." That's how important it is. If you don't get that, then you don't get God. You don't get the kingdom of God. Because our whole purpose in life is to love. Okay? And so what's the link between God and man? Another way of what I'm just saying is what St. Augustine says. He says that the mystery of the Christian Trinity is the mystery of godly love. You see the Trinity if you see love. Okay? So the very fact of being in communion with God, knowing Him, loving Him, makes you love other people. It's by definition. There's no other way of being. So the practical reality of that is if I live my life without loving other people, and that's everyone, then I haven't understood God. I cannot say that I understood God. And so that leads me to difference number two. The source of our love is very different. Okay? The source. Not just the definition, but the source. And where I kind of understood this concept was that I have a patient at work. He's a Christian guy. And he always, he spends his life trying to defend the concept of Christianity to outside people. So when people come into him and say, oh, you know, where's God in natural disasters? Where's God in that volcano and that eruption and that earthquake and that September 11 and blah, 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 blah. And so he says, his answer to this is that, okay, fine, there's a travesty. There's people are dying, fine. But look at the response afterwards. What happens directly after some of these bad things happen? You see a whole community come together to help the people that are suffering. Every time. The floods in Queensland, everyone mounts together to help them. September 11, look at they've created a museum for those people. Okay? It's huge response from the people that are moved to help those people. And so what he says is that response, these random people have nothing to do with God. They go and respond in that positive, loving way. Where does that come from? Where is the source of that loving act? And he says, well, that must be God. That's God working in those people. Okay? So the source of love is very different. Whereas someone might go out and do a good act and not know where it comes from, we know where it comes from. And that's the difference between us and them. I understand those loving acts, even if it's a non-Christian doing it, that's an act of God. That's an act of love. And so I'll just show you a video highlighting this, illustrating this point. The first one, Nana in Internet Explorer. So hopefully the sound works. If it doesn't, I'll explain what's happening.
I know you guys just have little things.
Coach Peter Morales of the Coronado High School Thunderbirds in El Paso, Texas, makes no qualms about it. He has a favorite on this team.
Mitchell, I need you to help me out with my coaching tips, Mitchell.
Team manager Mitchell Marcus has a developmental disability.
One, two, three, five.
He far surpasses everyone here when it comes to love of the game.
He's this amazing person that our basketball team loves being around.
Yay!
Mitchell's mom, Amy, says he's always been that way.
Mitchell always had a basketball that was always playing on it for his birthday.
And because basketball is that important to him, on the last game of the regular season, the coach told Mitchell, suit up.
What was it like to put on the uniform?
I was very happy.
I bet you were.
Just wearing a jersey was enough for Mitchell. But what he didn't know, what no one knew at the time, was that the coach planned to play him at the end, no matter what the score.
You're prepared to lose that game.
Pray as long as. Pray as long as.
So, with a minute and a half left, we're not a leading, but only by 10. Coach Morales put in his manager. But here's where the fairy tale fell apart. Although his teammates did everything they could to get Mitchell a basket, each time they passed him the ball, he either missed the shot, or, like on their last possession, booted it out of bounds, turning the ball over to the other team with just seconds left.
He wasn't sure I was scoring, but I was hoping that he was happy and he was just putting the game.
Could you have ever imagined what happened next?
I could not.
What happened next happened on the inbound. The guy with the ball there is a senior at Franklin High School, number 22, Jonathan Montañez.
I was raised to treat others how you want to be treated. Just thought Mitchell deserved his chance, deserved his opportunity.
I think I'll cry about it for the rest of my life.
What Jonathan did was yell out Mitchell's name, then threw the ball right to him, right there. One of the most memorable turnovers of all time.
That
wasn't the game. When the buzzer sounded, Coronado had 15 more points than Brent.
Okay, so you look at that incident, right? You look at that incident. And you see that everyone stops for a moment and forgets about the game, couldn't care less. Opponents, the coach, no one cares. Even the crowd. And all they care about is this guy. And you think about that, and you think that's a great act of love from all these people. That's all they cared about in that moment. Where does that come from? Where is that love coming from? And for us, that love comes from God. God acts in the world. He's here. He's in those people. And so that's one of the big differences between the way we think and the way they think, is that we know where it comes from, even if we act the same. I know the source of love in my life. Okay, and those good deeds that are happening. And mind you, just to highlight the way we think is a little bit different, is that you type in great acts of love in Google, and all you come up with is romantic stories, right? Romantic. as if that's the only way of loving, right? Whereas, and then you type in great acts of kindness, that's how you find that stuff. Right? Great acts of kindness are great acts of love. Alright, next. Okay, so what are some of the requirements of the way we love? Alright, so First John. If someone says, I love God and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God must love his brother also. So difference number three is that our love is a commandment. It's not an option. It's not take it or leave it. Right? It's not if you feel like it today. Our love is a commandment. Okay, and that's another big difference. Whereas for people outside, it's a choice. For us, it's not a choice. We have to love. And if we don't love God. Fourth difference. Our love is unconditional. Right? So let's read Matthew 5. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemy, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil as on the good, and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Okay? So you have to love unconditionally. Enemy, doesn't matter. Spitefully use you, doesn't matter. You have to love. There's no option. Okay? It's unconditional. Doesn't matter about the circumstances or how deserving the person in front of you is. Because some people, frankly, are not deserving. But we have to love. For example, I'll give you a quick example. Pope John Paul in 19-something or other, 50, 60-something or other, he was in his car, and that was before the days when they had those gun-protected cars, those bulletproof cars, and he was driving through, and this guy, he was Arab, Turkish, Mehmet or something like that, his name, decided that he wanted to shoot the Pope. He was put up to it by someone, and he shot the Pope, tried to assassinate him, okay? The Pope ended up having surgery on his bowel. He survived, but he had surgery on his bowel. Probably had symptoms from it for the rest of his life because he had part of his bowel removed. And he survived it. This guy, they caught him, of course, like there's millions of people around. Of course, he's going to get caught. They took him to prison, and he was imprisoned, I think, for life in Italy. Okay? Years later, he was pardoned by the president of Italy at the command or request of the Pope, of Pope John Paul. He's the person he tried to assassinate. He insisted that the Pope, the president, pardon him, and he was pardoned. Of course, he was sent back to Turkey where he went to prison because he assassinated someone before that. But they had a relationship to the end of their life. So even on Pope John Paul's deathbed, this guy Mehmet, right, even though he probably remained a Muslim or whatever he was writing, he had a relationship with Pope John Paul, and he wrote him a letter on his deathbed. And you think about that, you think of the way Pope John Paul acted in that situation. That's a Christian. He tried to kill the guy. He probably suffered the rest of his life because of that. But still, he wanted him pardoned. He did everything that he could. He had no control over Turkey, but at least he pardoned him from Italy. Alright, difference number five is our love must be practical. And so I'd like to, I'll let St. Paul explain this, I won't explain it myself. So if someone has a Bible, I'd rather them read it than I read it. Has anyone got a Bible in front of them? Anyone? Someone with a loud voice. Loud voice. All of... So you can't do a talk on love without 1 Corinthians 13. Danny Marwood messaged me earlier today and said, oh, I guess you'll be mentioning 1 Corinthians 13. I said, yes, I will be. All right, so 1 Corinthians 13, we're going to read the whole chapter, okay? And I want you... It's self-explanatory, okay? This is a practical lesson on love. It gives you what you need to do to act in love. Okay? So please concentrate as we read through it and try to understand the way you have to act. So any one of you guys? Loud. Loud.
Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have no love, I have become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Love suffers long and is kind. Love
so this is the main section here. Now, this is the practical section. Get it?
Yeah, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails, but whether there are prophecies, they will fail. Whether there are tongues, they will cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect has come, then that which is in part will be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know just as I also am known. And now abide faith, hope, love, these three. But the greatest of these is love.
Okay. So yeah, please, like if you ever want to understand love practically, like how am I supposed to live practically, read this chapter. Read this chapter. And if you don't do these things, if you're puffed up, if you envy, if you think evil, if you can't forgive, if you behave rudely, then these are not attributes of love. Okay? You cannot define them any other way because that's how Paul has put it out for us. So it's a very practical chapter. Okay, so the next question is, how do we do this? Okay? How do we get into this habit of living the way Paul is telling us to? And so I'll show you another quick video to try and to explain that a little bit. So it's a cartoon, but it's a real meeting.
Yeah, get 15.9 expected contact on maintain 15.9, cactus 15.9. Cactus 15.9, turn left lane 270.
Cactus 15.9, hit birds, so your phone's running from the angles, returning back towards the morning.
Okay, you need to return a little bit. Turn left heading up
220.
Copy the park, he's got emergency returning. It was 15.9. He burned strike, he lost all engine, he lost the thrust in the engine, he's returning immediately.
Yeah, it's 15.29, which engines?
He lost thrust in both engines, he said.
Got it.
Act is 15.29. Couldn't you get it, Steve? Do you want to try to lay in 1-1-3?
We're not able to remain at the office.
Contact is 15.9, could be left traffic to runway 41. Okay, what do you need to land? Do you want to try to go to Tidra?
Yes.
Tidra! Empire, I feel LaGuardia Park, Sky Mercy inbound.
Thank
you. Contact is 15.9, over the George Washington Bridge, wants to go to the airport right now.
Going to our airport, check. Does he need assistance?
Yes, it was a bird strike. Can I get him in for runway 1?
Runway 1, that's good.
Contact is 15.9, turn right 280, can land runway 1 in Tidra.
We can't do it.
Okay, which runway would you like to see tomorrow?
We're going to be in
that one. I'm sorry, say again, Cactus. Cactus 15.9, radar contact is left. You also got Newark Airport up at 2 o'clock in about 7 miles. Eagle 5478,
and they all survived. Okay, so that actually happened. The plane took off, and a bird took out the engine. They had to land an emergency, and they landed on the river. Okay? Now, I was listening to a talk about this incident, and the guy was saying that for this pilot to land the plane on the river in that short period of time, he had to do about 100 things in about a minute or 2 minute period. Okay? He had to call up this guy, turn it off, turn autopilot off, a million things. Right? And all of it would have happened subconsciously. He wouldn't, if he had to sit there and think about each and pull out the manual and say, all right, how do we do this again? Right? He would have crashed the plane. They would have all died. But because he was so well trained, he could do it subconsciously, okay? And so what the point of the guy who was doing the talk on this said was that for you to be able to live as though it's a way of life, you need to train yourself daily. You need to be trained. And this is the main point of the talk today. You need to be trained, okay? every little decision you make in life, the small decisions, the daily decisions, define who you are as a person, and they define how you will act for the rest of your life. So if faced with an insult today, you can learn to love that person, then that will define who you are in life. But if you always react when I'm insulted, it will not, you'll never change the way you react, ever. It will not happen. It's training. I remember there was Iski was telling us a story once when he was a junior in the hospital, and there was they were doing surgery on this lady, young lady, gynecological surgery. So it's normally really low risk procedures. Don't expect anyone to die on the table. And she started bleeding heavily internally, and they couldn't stop the bleeding. So everyone was panicking. It's a panic because if there's a young lady dying in surgery, it's a huge deal in the hospital. Okay, these days, maybe not in the old days they used to die. Right. But now people don't die unless there's a problem. And so the surgeon was panicking, no one knew what to do. So they said, alright, there's a vascular surgeon next door, go grab the vascular surgeon. He comes in, he's got his own technique of sorting it out. He walks in casually, walks in, stops the bleeding, walks back out. Like as if it's nothing. And everyone's like, whoa man, what a machine. Right? But why? How was he able to do that so easily? Because he's trained. He's trained. He's done it day in, day out, day in, day out. Doesn't even think about it. He just does it. He just does it. Athletes do the same thing. Basketball players, soccer players, they do it. They don't think. You know, there's a lot of psychology on high-end athletes. The psychology is that they don't think. They just do. Why? Because they're trained. Their body's designed to do it. We need to train ourselves. We need to train. Each day I make the decision that I need to love. I need to love the person in front of me. I need to love the person in front of me. Even if it's hard, I do it. I do it every day, every day, every day. Until that becomes the way you live. You don't even think about it anymore. People look at you and they think, how does he just love everyone? Because he's been training all his life to do it. And so it becomes second nature. Just like Pope John Paul. He wouldn't have got there. I mean, maybe it's not even his nature to love like that. But he trained himself and he became that way. So the lesson today I learned from Uncle Maybe. Once he was doing a talk on love, and I was talking about, you know, loving my enemies. It's such an abstract concept. I don't love them, so I can pretend to, but it doesn't mean anything. And he said, yes, that's right, pretend to. Go out there and just pretend to love everyone in front of you. Act as though you do, because your emotion will follow. That's the practical lesson from today. Go out as though you love everybody, even if you don't feel the inclination to. Even if you feel like it's fake, act as though you do. And the emotion will follow. The actual acts of love will follow. And your love of God will follow. Okay? That's the main practical lesson for today. So, difference number six is that our love is a way of living. It defines the way we live. People outside, it might be one of their characteristics. But for us, it defines how we live. Okay, just one more difference is that our love is sacrificial. And I'll show one more video. I don't know if you guys would, like, find this interesting, but I found it really interesting. I saw it on a documentary. I was sick the other day, so I was watching. It's the octopus. Explain what happened. Basically, mother octopus doesn't eat for 6 months to keep her eggs alive. And as they hatch, she dies. She lives for about a year, and she sacrifices her life for her kids. Alright, and I found that really interesting. Well, it's a really Christian concept. Right? You know, even Pope Shenouda's mother died in childbirth. So, our love is sacrificial, okay? Our love is sacrificial, and why is our love sacrificial? Because Christ's love was sacrificial. So, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. We're almost finished, brother. Alright, okay, so the last difference, and I'll finish on this, okay, the last difference between the way we love and the way outside people love is that there's consequences to the way we love. There's a reward and consequences, okay? And we've gone through some of them already, but we'll just go through them very quickly. First, the first one which we touched on before, if you love with a genuine love, if you live your life in love, then you are not far from the kingdom of God. And that's directly from God, Jesus' mouth. You are not far from the kingdom of God. Number two, you get to become perfect as Jesus is perfect. So he does that whole spiel on love, and he says, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. Okay? So that attaining perfection is through love. Three, you get to see God face to face. And that's what St. Paul said. He says, now we see in a mirror dimly lit, but later you will see God face to face. You get to encounter God face to face if you live in love. And the final one is that we live without fear. There is no fear if we live in love, no matter what happens to us in this life. We're all afraid of something, whether we acknowledge it or not. Okay? But there is no fear if we live in love. Where is your program? Any questions?
Any questions to Paul before he does a run up? Anything? Stand up, Greg.